to say.
Never mind that.
Why, that's me! Look at me! I'm an old man!
I'm Dr. Emmett Brown. I'm standing here on the parking lot.
Thank God I still got my hair! What on earth is this thing I'm wearing?
Well, this is a radiation suit.
Radiation suit? Of course. Because of all the fallout from the atomic wars. This is truly amazing. A portable television studio. No wonder your president has to be an actor. He's got to look good on television.
Whoa, this is it. This is the part coming up, Doc.
No. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
What did I just say?
The flux capacitor stores... This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts! 1.21 gigawatts! Great Scott! What the hell is a gigawatt? How could I have been so careless? 1.21 gigawatts! Tom, how am I going to generate that kind of power? It can't be done, can it?
Look, all we need is a little plutonium.
Oh, I'm sure that in 1985, plutonium is available in every corner drugstore, but in 1955, it's a little hard to come by. Marty, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you're stuck here.
Whoa, Doc, stuck here? I can't be stuck here. I got a wife in 1985. I got a girl.
Is she pretty?
Oh, she's beautiful. She's crazy about me. Look at this. Look what you wrote here, Doc. I mean... That says it all. Doc, my only hope.
Marty, I'm sorry, but the only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, you never know when or where it's ever going to strike.
We do now.
This is it. This is the answer. It says here that a bolt of lightning is going to strike the clock tower precisely 10:04 p.m. next Saturday night. If we could somehow harness this lightning, channel it into the flux capacitor, this might work. Next Saturday night, we're sending you back to the future.
Are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
six, five, four, three, two, one, zero. Blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
You're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html where you have access to not one but three separate chat rooms. Woohoo! I love saying that for some reason. Anyway, I typed in the chat room down there, what's it going to take? Mad Science shows live. In the last week or so here, I posted three videos on my YouTube channel called Solved. The first one Solved, and then there's Solved 2, and then there's Solved 3. These particular videos that I posted out there are confirmation for me, at the very least, that everything I've been saying all along is 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt proven science. I set out years ago to prove once and for all that energy was free. I think I've more than proved that energy is free. However, actually putting together a device that will convince the masses that, you know, there are ways to, at the very least, make your electrical devices run so incredibly efficient that you could save a whole lot of money. So even if you were still paying the power grid, at least you'd be able to save some money. Now, I got a link over here on eBay of a... They say you can save up to 35% electricity. It says killer AC 90-265 volt 50 kilowatt blue power saver saving box. Now, there's a lot of people out there that call this quackery. And essentially, the reason why they call it quackery is because they don't believe that you can save any electricity with it. But what's going on in this box is so ridiculously simple that it's just, I don't know. All it is a capacitor. That's it. And in electrical signals, you got different sine waves. And so you'll hear terminology like a pure sine wave or a square wave or whatever. For inverter systems. And so basically this is a smoothing capacitor that you put, you plug it in your wall, and all it does is take the electricity and basically changes the signal, smooths the signal out in that area wherever you're using that particular deal. And as far as it saving up to 35% of your electricity, I don't know, I haven't tested it. But nonetheless, I do want to buy a couple of these to do some tests on, whatever, for myself. But these devices right here, the capacitors inside there and the capacitors in these videos that I showed you, capacitor technology is becoming more and more amazing as time goes. Now, there's a video YouTuber out there called Laser Saber, Laser Hacker, and... couple other ones, Rimstar.org, whatever. They'd done videos quite some time back where they had literally got rid of what would have been about a 20 or 30 pound lead acid battery and instead replaced it with a supercapacitor battery bank that other YouTubers had tried out, and one guy says 3 years and counting, he's still using this capacitor bank. And the difference there would be that this capacitor bank is under 5 pounds. That's a big significance, because if you're carrying around 30 pounds of weight as opposed to 5 pounds of weight, you can see where there would be some savings. Just that little bit of weight alone, the car doesn't have to work as hard dragging it down the road, if you understand what I'm trying to say. So it makes it, at the very least, more efficient. And the charge and discharge rate of these batteries are so incredible. I mean, there are individuals out there who literally take these same type of systems and are able to run, like drill presses and things like that. You know, a drill press and a lamp at the same time. And they charge up in less than a few minutes, you know, from just a solar panel. And so they're showing a different way to use those capacitors and to use electricity. Well, charging these things up is ridiculously simple as well. So when I say, what is it going to take? I mean that if you look out here in this world and you listen to everybody, and talk about, you know, their electric bills are too high or the fuel bills are too high and so on and so forth, And then you got somebody standing there saying, look, man, there's a better way. There is a better way. We can make this work, and we can do it a lot more efficiently, a lot cheaper. In the video that I showed, I built a simple little circuit that other YouTubers out there have been messing around with, and their MOSFET flyback drivers circuits. It's really ridiculously simple circuit. I think I posted it on Mad Science podcast page, but if I didn't, then I will I'll go back and do that later. But nonetheless, it's a ridiculously simple circuit. And the whole purpose of this circuit is basically to produce a synthetic magnetic field. That's all you're doing. You're using the switch to turn something on and off and making a field expand and collapse. So what I figured out with these particular deals is, at a full 9 volts, it's running too high. You have to be able to slow this thing down. That's what the motor controller in the deal was for, was to actually... I should have used probably a potentiometer. I probably could have slowed it down, with a potentiometer, but I used a motor controller because it's pretty much all I had at the time. Also, I do have a picture on the podcast page of the DC motor controller with the numbers on there, so you'll know it runs from 1.8 to 3 volts to 5 volts to 6 volts to 12 volts and maximum of 2 amps, low voltage, And it's able to produce really high voltages. I mean, I blew up 2 of my voltmeters with this thing. I produced a high enough frequency, high voltage that it was over 600 volts and was able to burn up 2 of my voltmeters. Now, this is why I deal with the cheapo voltmeters, because the cheapo voltmeters... then they don't make you feel so bad when you burn them up. It's really high dollar ones. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to copy this link right here, and I'm going to post it in there of the circuit that I was talking about. And also I'll go back and I will post in a link of the picture of the motor controller that I used to actually control how fast the MOSFET was turning on and off. And I'm putting in there, this is a picture that Ludic Science put together I kind of copied his name because I wanted to get him credit for it, because there's a lot of YouTubers out there that don't have a problem using somebody else's intellectual ideas and not giving them credit for it. I'm not like that. But I just posted in the link of the circuit that I'm talking about that I used in the video. And I gotta go back. Just hold on a second. Yeah, this is terrible for live radio whenever you're just sitting there trying to get something down here. Okay, I need to copy that one there. View image. Now, I need to go back. All right, I'm now posting it back in the chat room, the DC motor controller that I used in order to pulse this circuit. Because I want to be able to control the speed. That's the thing. Now I got to wait for that to come on there so I can shut that off. This is going to start playing the radio show. That's why you need like a crew or something like that, somebody to keep you from messing stuff up in the process of trying to do a radio show. Alright, so now in 2 out of 3 and getting ready to be 3 chat rooms, I've done posted 2 pictures, and I'm also going to repost a picture of a data sheet for something else that basically comes in alternating flasher relay. And all three of these are important, because if you want to build a perfect circuit that can literally act as an inverter with a small DC input, then these are three things that are going to be important. Now, the first picture that I posted in there is a really super simple circuit that I need to open that in the... I'm going to mess up and click on the wrong thing here. Alright, let's click on that. Alright. This is a flyback driver with only two components in there. I say two components because, you know, it's got a MOSFET and a resistor, but it actually has some coils and a flyback transformer that's been modified. So what Ludic Science did, it was he took 12 turns of wire, he wrapped it around the ferrite core of a basically a flyback driver like you'd have in the old style TV sets or computer monitors and stuff like that. And he made 12 turns of wire and a center tap, which means that after the sixth turn, there's another wire that is in the middle of the coil, and then it goes on around. And connects to the battery on one side and to the center pin of the MOSFET on the other side. And if you look at the picture, it's really super simple to understand how this is going on here. The negative goes to the far right pin, and the resistor, which is to keep that high voltage spike from coming back and burning up the MOSFET, or too much current getting back and burning up the MOSFET. But all this thing does is it turns the switch on and off rapidly, really fast. That's it. And as it's doing that, it's inducing a magnetic field around that ferrite core, which in turn is transferring through the windings of the flyback driver and producing, at the very least, 2,000 volts. Probably even higher than that. There's actually a mathematical equation according to how far the arcs are apart that it is producing really high voltage. And the second picture that I put in here, that one is the DC motor controller. It's a PWM1803B. And it will run from 1.8 volts to 3 volts to 5 volts to 6 volts to 12 volts at 2 amps. So you can, as low as 1.8 volts, you can run this thing. And the key for this is, when I'm running this circuit that Ludic Science put together, I need to be able to ensure that that MOSFET doesn't get hot. Now, when I run a brand new 9-volt battery, it has a lot of current availability to it. It has a lot of, basically causes the MOSFET to get hot. And that's what you don't want to happen. You don't want the MOSFET to get hot. And also, you don't want it to be too high of a frequency, because then it just starts jumping all over the place. And you burn out your voltmeters like I did. But either way, these are pretty cheap DC motor controllers that you can buy off of eBay. And the next link that I put in line was It's an automotive direction indicator lamp. It's relay driver. Basically, they use these type of circuits for like flashing and alternating lights like the police use in their cars or school buses use to flip-flop the wheel back and forth. But what the key about this is, the relay inside there, this is actually pulsing a magnetic field strong enough to turn on and off a relay, which essentially is the flip-flop circuit. And so this one very well could be modified to be the actual driver circuit that would work off of a 12 volt car battery, that would be able to pulse a strong enough magnetic field that would give you the current flow that you needed in order to be able to run something. Now, there's another video that I posted in there. And let me get back to the chat room. Let me see. Scroll up. Do. Actually, there's two videos from... Well, there's three videos of what you... Apparently, four. Alright. The first video in line is a video where a man basically did one of the similar types of circuits, but had multiples in line in order to be able to get lots of current. And he ran his off of 4 volts and was able to basically run a starter motor at the end. Once again, the temperature of those MOSFETs is going to be key. He did show that in this particular deal that the MOSFETs keep getting hot. Well, that's understandable. But if you design the system to where you have something that's going to keep those MOSFETs cool, such as maybe some cool circulating oil that will keep over the top of these and not allow them to, you know, take away that heat, keep them from getting hot. But nonetheless, if you watch these videos, and then you go down and you look up underneath the chat room down there, you'll see that people are literally getting ridiculous. Matter of fact, I'm going to go ahead and kick on this right here. I'm going to try to stop the actual play of the video, and I'm going to scroll down and see if my comments in the chat room. Alright. This thing is like slow on the draw when I try to push the stop button. I don't want this doggone thing to play. It just wants to keep on doing what it wants to do, period. That's frustrating. Alright, let me see what's going on here. Do-do-do-do. Come on. Alright, basically what the video title says, 4 volts to 12 volts at 10 amp hour power, full DC boost run, 1000 watt motor, and this was done by ET Discovery. Now, I can't verify his numbers, where he's went from 4 volts up to 1000 watts. I can't verify his numbers. And it doesn't matter to me whether his numbers are correct or not. It matters to me of basically what he did with these MOSFETs. And this is my comment that I put on there. I said, after reading the comments in this chat on this video, I have not only thumbed the video up, but I subscribed as well. Now I am challenging anyone to replicate the circuit and try it before calling it fake or even making rude comments about the person showing the video until you put your time and effort and your money where your mouth is. If it doesn't work, then real testing will prove your case. But if it does work, people owe this person an apology for the ridiculous ignorance shown in the comments. This is the reason why the world is so screwed up. Because of people like the ones making the hate-filled, rude comments, I challenge any of you so-called know-it-alls, make a video and prove your case, otherwise you are proving only your own stupidity, period. Try it before you deny it. Don't say you did it. Show me the video evidence, or don't even waste your time with a reply. You will not get a response, period. Because it's like really frustrating. You go down and read some of these comments that they said to this individual, and he's trying to share something with them. He took 4 volts and took a and boosted it up and was able to run a starter motor with it. Alright, now I believe this is possible because of the research that I've done with MOSFETs and of the little device that I'm holding here in my hand. which is the flasher driver that I just told you about, that it looks like a 555 timer in there that is actually pulsing the coil. But these are already on the store shelves. And it's a driver that actually switches a relay back and forth. And it'll run on 12 volts. I don't know what the minimum that it will run on, but it'll run on 12 volts. So a car battery will kick this thing back and forth. And so you can take that little coil winding in there and build you a larger transformer and be able to pulse that transformer, pulse a magnetic field. And so, anyway, before I go too much farther with that, there's a video that I posted on there, Maker J101. He took an air compressor motor and turned it into an internal combustion engine. He did a few modifications. Basically took a compressor out of like a refrigerator, took the motor out of there, and turned it into an internal combustion engine. Now I want to see him take it a step further. I want him to take him and make it on the rotor that he used as a flywheel. I want to see him make a motor generator, a starter generator off of that flywheel, so that whenever he wants to start this up, he don't have to wrap the cord around it to get it to start. That all he has to do is turn an electrical source on, spin that motor up. Once the motor gets up to speed, it starts the engine and the combustion starts and the RPMs kick up and overcome the input of the other side. It actually becomes now a generator. They use that concept in tractors. And the next two videos down that I posted were of... doggone it. Let me go ahead and click on one of those. Alright, George Chinakis. I hope I'm saying that right. I'm going to try to stop this video before it starts playing, because this computer's it's possessed. It wants to do what it wants to do, period. Come on, load the page already. Alright. I think it says George Chiniotakis. I don't know. Sorry, George. I didn't mean to trash your name, but it's a good video. It's a free energy plasma experiment. This is a self-oscillating device, a electromagnetic oscillator, and it's an unusual transformer. Consists of is a unique array of magnets and coils and reed switch. He said, in his opinion, it's an LC circuit. And I posted chat on there, says I like it. But essentially, let me see what we got going on over here. Okay, sorry about that. So hold on, I gotta type a comment real quick. So anyway, all this stuff that I'm trying to show everybody are just pieces of the just pieces of the puzzle. Doggone it. I had my caps lock on. Hey, anyway, all we have to do in order to get some energy produced is to be able to design the perfect circuit. It's as simple as that. This can be done with a solid state circuit. We already know we can change AC or DC into AC using inverter technology. We know we can get really high voltages using the same technology. I mean, running microwave ovens off of inverter technology nowadays. They don't even have a transformer in them anymore. But if you want to be able to pulse a transformer, this technology that I'm holding in my hand, it's a little flasher relay. and basically alternates the back and forth, the field back and forth. You know, it's a flip-flop switch. It uses an electromagnet, you know, as a coil running around a little, that's what a relay is. Let me see who we got going on there. Yay. So, what's it going to take to get the world to understand how simple what I'm trying to say is? What's it going to take to get them to the chat room? What's it going to take to get them working together on an idea, a concept? You know, they said they need a clean, renewable alternative energy. We have every single piece of the puzzle, everything that we need, you can buy on the store shelves in order to make the perfect generating systems. You know, you go out and buy these really expensive inverters. And what usually goes wrong with these really expensive inverters is because they have MOSFETs and transistors in there and probably even 555 timers, which are nothing more than fast-acting switches. And what usually ends up going wrong with them is the doggone switches will get too hot, and it'll burn it up. So if you ever burn up a transit, or if you ever burn up a an inverter, then if you knew ahead of time the schematics on there, you knew ahead of time the size of the transistors or the numbers on there. There's different types of NPN and PNP transistors and MOSFETs. Basically, it's just a different way they switch. Different pin configurations, no big deal. But anyway, you could resolder in brand new MOSFETs and transistors, and that thing would come up and running again. And as long as you don't draw too much current off the thing like you did before, you won't burn it up again. Or if you find a method by which to cool it down, you won't burn it up. There's technology already available out there that if you take a bit of what you've learned from inverter technology, relays, and simple circuits like this one right here that Ludic Science put together, that doggone circuit could be added to. Instead of having one MOSFET running constantly, you could have it switching from one MOSFET to the next using something as simple timing with capacitors. Capacitor charges up. When it gets to a certain deal, it'll open the gate on one and send that energy through. And then that capacitor will voltage drop down, and that particular MOSFET will shut off. And then the next one in line will do the next one, and so on down the line. They'll just keep rotating back and forth and so on. And none of those MOSFETs will ever get hot because they're not running a continuous load. So, I'm not a perfect, when it comes down to electronics as far as engineering a circuit, I understand enough about it using this software that I got from Stephen Gibbons, this Crocodile software. I can pretty much design a circuit that will do what it is that needs to be done. You know, I understand where the resistors and all that kind of stuff needs to go, and I can actually test the circuit myself and that kind of deal. But the best case scenario is we get somebody, you know, together that is really good with electronics, knows electronics inside and out. And as long as they're willing to just basically explain the mechanics of what I need done, and they put the best part in place, then we can build a perfect circuit. We can build a circuit that will not only give you the current flow that you need, but requires the least amount of energy input. This circuit that I showed in the video solved, the one I've been talking about, the MOSFET that Ludic Science did the little diagram for, the schematics. He used it as a flyback driver to get high voltage. Well, I'm doing pretty much the same thing, but I'm using it with bigger wire and basically bringing it up to not just high voltage, but a little bit of current as well, and being able to charge AC capacitors, DC capacitors, produce plasma and wireless energy all in the same signal. And so you get it adjusted just right. And if you pay attention to that video and you understand the implications of what I just showed you, free energy is right there in front of your face. No ifs, ands, or buts. 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt, proven science right there in front of you. Now, that circuit right there is in simplicity. It's simple. It's a simple circuit. But you could take that simple circuit and you can add to it and make it even better. You could take the transformer design that I showed in there and make it even better. You can basically build a doggone circuit that will use the heat, any heat that would be generated to move that energy back around where you want it to go, or you can use it to be able to, like the video that I posted in there where everybody give all the rude comments to the individual because they're telling him, you know, basically he's stupid and it's a fake and all this kind of stuff. He got a lot of current, enough current to literally, and he even designed his own transformer to process. But the guy took junk, recycled parts for the most part, and proved a concept. And all it has to do with is producing a synthetic magnetic field. That's it. Right now, your average permanent magnet generator spins magnets past a coil of wire to induce the current flow. That's it. And under the circumstance where you basically try to pull that energy off and the electrons start to flow back inside, which I'm just using electron theory at this moment because it's easier to understand. The electrons flow back into the same device you're trying to pull the energy off and create a second field that is now trying to bog it back down. Nature's trying to balance itself back out. And when you start to draw the current, everything begins to get hot because of any resistance or whatever. The circuit that he's got going on right there, that could be modified in order to keep it cooler. And it could be utilized instead of trying to pull that energy directly off of it, utilizing the strength of that magnetic field as a primary to energize a secondary that you in turn would then pull that energy. The further you can get that load away from that magnetic field, the better. Now, I talk about the plasma reactor basically taking and changing that energy from one form to the next. But I also found out, and I posted in a Solve 3, where I was able to self-discharge a capacitor with a fluorescent bulb starter. Basically, the high frequency of the energy going in there would energize the argon gas into the fourth state of matter, being plasma. Science says light is heat, heat is light, vice versa, so there's a little heat element inside there. When that plasma heats that little element up, it makes contact with the other side. The little metal piece in there bends and makes the contact with the other side and shorts out the capacitor. So you could use that same thing to allow a capacitor to fully charge and then discharge itself into a capacitor bank on the other side. So now you got like a really strong punch from a capacitor that once it gets fully charged and that that temperature raises that thermal switch up and then discharges it into the capacitor bank, it will push that energy forward. Always remember that the highest pressure is going to be able to overcome. It's like when you go to air up your tire, your air compressor can't air that tire up direct. It can, but it's going to take a long time. It depends on what kind of air pressure you got. It's when you build the pressure up in that that tank higher than the potential of the tire that you're trying to air up, that's when you can transfer that energy through. Same thing with capacitors. And so with that said, if you understand that concept, then you understand how that video that I did called 9-volt, how that functioned, where you got large capacitors run down into smaller capacitors, run down into smaller capacitors, and so on, and they're all running a load. As long as the large capacitor bank's full, everything below that is full. And you can run your loads real time with that. So what I'm proposing here is just a completely different concept of how we basically store the energy before actually using it. It's not rocket science. The circuitry we need is out there. It's technology we need is right before our very eyes. And if you took a 9-volt battery in this circuit right here, you could produce a lot of voltage. Voltage is pressure. The higher the voltage pressure, if your voltage pressure is higher than the potential of the battery or the capacitor you're trying to charge on the other side, then just like that car tire, you build up that pressure, you air up the tire, and there you go. And if that voltage continues to come into that tank, and that tank never goes below the potential of the container you're trying to fill up, you can run high voltage with pressure and get all the current you need on the other side because of that voltage pressure and the volume that you just produced that is able to do exactly like an air compressor did and air up your tire on your car with the weight of your car on top of it. It's that simple. It's so ridiculously simple. This means that you would be able to take your average solar panel, run a circuit that is specifically designed at a frequency range that won't cause your parts to get hot, but it will produce high voltage and be able to send that high voltage in the form of pressure to fill those tanks. Also, in the video solved, I said that voltmeter was actually part of the circuit. Well, I've since figured out that all I had to do was replace that voltmeter with a high voltage diode. That was it. So no longer need, I might have to do an update, but no longer need the voltmeter in the series in order to be able to charge that. Just a high voltage diode. I don't know what the numbers on it are, but this diode came out of a microwave oven off of the same type of AC capacitor. But it was able to allow the thing to charge. And I don't know if I actually got it out earlier, but I was talking about the 9-volt battery. A fully charged 9-volt battery causes the MOSFET to get hot. So this circuit actually runs better at a lower voltage. it's at around about 7 volts, maybe 5 to 7 volts, is all you need in order to run that circuit to produce that amount of pressure that can literally produce lethal voltages. Ain't no joke. I mean, I shocked the living crud out of myself with this system. But keeping that in mind, I took less than a 9-volt battery, which would have been 5 to 7 volts, and I ran a motor controller that I showed you a picture of in the chat room there that says that it will run on 1.8 volts, 3 volts, 5 volts, 6 volts, and 12 volts. So 5 to 6 to 12 right there. I was in that 5 to 6 volt range. So even when my battery was weak, it wasn't a full 9 volt, it was 6 to 7 volts, it still had enough to run that circuit right there. And it still had enough to pulse the next circuit in line, which was Ludic Science. It's the IRFZ44 MOSFET. So, using that motor controller and that MOSFET and these two little circuits together on a battery that wasn't even fully charged, I was able to get, when that battery was fully charged, over 600 volts. And that's what burnt my voltmeter out. That's how come I had to figure out a different way to actually run that without having that voltmeter in line. And that's where the diode came in. The diodes are in microwave ovens in the doggone AC capacitor side of it. So there you go. Two little circuits, a diode, a bridge rectifier that you can buy right off the doggone store shelf, and a little homemade transformer that not only does wireless energy, but it's pulsing two separate primaries or secondaries at the same doggone time. You could modify this circuit to do multiples of this. You could actually design a larger system using the same doggone thing, because keep in mind, folks, all you need is that magnetic field to be at the right speed to produce a strong pulse. That's it. You don't need some gasoline engine turning a generator head. Something as simple as these little driver circuits will produce a magnetic field through induction. And the center tap is essentially catching some of the energy on the way back as the field's collapsing and helping it to work better. But nonetheless, a properly designed ferrite core transformer, and ferrite cores, the reason why I say ferrite cores is because the laminate, the metal laminate ones, they seem to get hot faster. The ferrite cores seem to stay cooler longer. But you could design a custom ferrite core with multiple coils on there, and these particular coils came out of microwave ovens as well. They came out of the doggone fan motor that's inside there. And if you look at these fan motors, they're electrical engineering wonder in themselves, because it's not like your old style electric motor. They don't have a bunch of turns. It got two little copper straps that go around there and basically produces an inductive magnetic field. You just take a look at one of them. They're not like the old style electric motors where they're surrounded by coils. This has a coil on the core. It sends the magnetic flux through that core and hits a couple little copper straps that changes the deal. And if you look at the rotor itself, it has little grooves cut in there that make and break the circuit and cause the thing to rotate. But that's what I got these coils off of that I have the ferrite cores running through. And so all of this is off-the-shelf stuff, most of which was recycled from old microwave ovens. And so there you go, man. If you got somebody around that is really super well-versed in electronics, and they really seriously want to make the most efficient energy system in the history of time, there you go. The answer's right there. You got these relay switches. If you take apart and look at the insides of that, and you see that circuitry, and you see how that works, that's a mini version of what it is that I'm talking about. Now, its only purpose is to basically switch a switch back and forth to change the polarity to turn the light on the right or to turn the light on the left. Causes them to flip back and forth. That's it. That's the only purpose. But it shows that with a solid-state circuit board, you can get a strong enough magnetic field to literally produce an electromagnet to hit that relay on and off. And this thing will run according to the specs on it. Let me look underneath this doggone thing. This has a maximum 25 amps. So you can run this doggone circuit up to 25 amps before you'll burn it up. That's amazing. It's amazing. We got everything we need right now to literally build the perfect energy systems. Why? What's it going to take? What's it going to take to get people on board? What's it going to take to get the governments of the world to be wanting to do what it is that they've been saying that they want to do all along? That's my question. Alright, I'm going to also find one more video. And I don't care what you think about it or what you don't think about it. If you watch this video, I'm going to try to stop this again because this dang thing don't want to cooperate. Alright. Alright, there we go. This video is approximately, come on, give me some information here. Where's it at? Really? Alright, well, I don't know exactly how long this video is. But it's basically a video from 1978, Dewey B. Larson in 1978. Listen to what he's got to say about inventive versus inductive theories. And the title says, Math is Not Reality. Okay. Copy. Alright, I'm gonna post this in there. But give an honest listen to what this man was talking about, and you might understand modern day education system. You might understand why it is that the world doesn't have free energy. You know, I think I might just go ahead and try to play that, since I ain't got no guest on the show right now. I might just go ahead and try to play that straight across. That'd give me some And maybe I can stop it here and there. Let me see if this thing will play for me. Now this is on a YouTube. Alright, this is on a YouTube user, Jaronism. He talks about flat earth information. So regardless of what you think about flat earth, this information that this man's talking about in 1969 is relevant to why I believe, you know, we don't have free energy, why I believe science is stuck in a rut, or maybe even literally lying for financial purposes. But I'm going to try to play this straight across, so let's see.
Houston, we have a problem.
What you're seeing here is a mirage.
Men are born ignorant, not stupid. They are made stupidly stupid by education. That was Bertrand Russell said that. Alright. Anybody who has been seriously engaged in scientific work of any kind realizes that over the entrance to the gate of the Temple of Science are written the words, "Ye must have faith." I missed that one. Anyway, the following speech was given by Dewey B. Larson, 8/25/1978. Let's see if we can get this to play through.
Just to go in one better, I'm going to go still farther back. 5,000 years ago, when the invention of writing on clay tablets by the Sumerians first gave the human race an opportunity to make a permanent record of its thoughts and actions, there was already in existence a rather sophisticated science of astronomy. The priests, who were the scientists of those days, were not only familiar with elementary astronomical facts, such as the apparent movements of the sun, moon, and planets, but they had also advanced to the point where they were able to predict eclipses and to calculate the length of the year within about a half hour of its present accepted value. The premises on which these calculations and others of the same kind were made were the fundamentals of the science of that day, in the sense in which I am using the term NED. That is, they were the most basic of the relations that were used, the principles that were used by the science of that day. Now, these principles were originally derived by a simple application of what we now call inductive reasoning. That is, they were generalizations from experience. And that is the most reliable method of arriving at scientific principles, fundamental or otherwise. But unfortunately, it's limited by the amount of empirical information that's available and by the extent to which that information has been analyzed. So the result is that an inductive science, such as that of the ancient peoples, has a tendency to fall behind the progress of empirical discovery. And ultimately, it acquires a rather embarrassing accumulation of unsolved problems. Now, that was the situation in Egypt, in Babylonia, and in the Far East, about 3,000 years ago. The time was clearly ripe for some new approach, and that was provided by a remarkable group of thinkers that flourished in Greece during the golden age of that country's history. The source of order in the universe, these men said, was mind. And the proper way of arriving at general principles was to apply insight and reasoning. The result of that change in policy was to concentrate attention on the causes of physical phenomena rather than on the phenomena themselves. Where the Egyptians saw only the fact that a rock falls if it's released from a height, The Greeks looked for the cause of the fall. Now they reasoned that everything must have its natural place. So the rock and falling then was merely seeking for its natural place. In this way...
Okay, I'm going to pause this just for a second. I had an idiot just show up in my chat room with the name of BS Detector. That's what idiots do. See, I'm not playing this video here for you to think or whatever about the flat earth or any kind of like that. This isn't what the deal. If you actually pay attention to the content of what this man is saying, when you finally get down to it, you'll understand why it is that I'm actually playing this deal. And it all basically goes into exactly what I'm talking about here on Mad Science. What's it going to take before we actually get clean, renewable alternative energy out there to the world? That's the whole deal. And if you have basic science, if you have scientists out there who can basically invent theories, and those theories are considered to be laws, laws of physics or whatever, and that basically becomes a hindrance, a brick wall to any real researchers out there that want to do some serious research and to basically solve the problems that they said that we so-called had. When idiots like that BS Detector show up here in the chat room, I understand that I'm hitting them in the sore spot because they don't get it. They think they're intelligent, but they're not. All they're doing is hindering humanity. I'm sitting here showing to the world for free ideas that work mechanically in electricity that we could, at the very least, make our energy so super efficient. And, you know, if somebody thinks something has to do with a taboo subject like the flat earth, look, folks, I don't care whether the earth is flat. I don't care whether it's round. I don't care whether it's dodecahedron. What I care about is the truth and being able to somebody critically think for themselves. But see, because I'm trying to share a bit of information, this person right here, who's so stuck in the box, which I deleted the comment. I haven't banned them yet, but that's next. This is what you have to contend with when you're trying to show the world that energy is indeed free. And we're not even talking about over unity or zero point or any of that other stuff like that. We're not trying to get out more than we're putting in. We're not even trying to violate the so-called laws of physics. Working within the realm of the mechanical abilities of the technology that we have available to us today, we can make super efficient machines. We can make super efficient electronics and equipment and everything. That's what I've been trying to show everybody all along. So, if you could turn around and run a whole lot more off the off of a less than fully charged 9-volt battery using the laws of physics and science, and then you got idiots like that that come in there and start mouthing off stuff, you know, and putting the rude comments in there. This is one of two people that did that, and I know exactly who the one or two people are. And I'm not even going to say their name because they're not even worthy of mentioning their name on this radio show. Because that's the kind of attitude that they got. But nonetheless, I'm going to finish playing this deal right here. And hopefully, those with a critical mind can literally pay attention to what this man has been saying. He said this back in 1978 about the way that science works. And this is the key for why I'm playing this deal. It's not whether the earth is flat or round. It ain't got nothing to do with what I'm talking about. It's what this man said in there, and how science, the inner workings of science work, is why modern day man is as stupid as BS Detector that showed up in the chat room. So, here we go.
By providing an explanation for what happened, they remedied the chief defect of the previous inductive theories. Similarly, they reasoned Meyer indicated, that while the Earth is obviously imperfect, the heavens are perfect. And all heavenly motions must then take the perfect form, that of a circle. So the orbits of the planets are undoubtedly circular. Now, observation and experiment were definitely relegated to a secondary position by the Greeks, but they were not disregarded altogether. So when the observation showed that the planetary orbits are not exactly circles, it was recognized that here is a awkward discrepancy that we have to do something about. But one of the strong points of an inventive science, such as that of the Greeks, is that it can easily accommodate new discoveries simply by more invention. So they assumed that the planets move in small circles called epicycles, and these epicycles then move around the main planetary orbit. Then when further observational refinement disclosed still more discrepancies, those could be taken care of in exactly the same way, merely by adding more epicycles. Now, this Ptolemaic theory of planetary orbits is typical of inventive theories in general. And since we see it in a historical perspective, by taking a look at this Ptolemaic theory, we can get an idea of the general characteristics of inventive theories. The first point that we need to note is that that theory was mathematically correct within the existing observational limits, the then existing limits. That is a general characteristic of all inventive theories because they are invented for that specific purpose. They are specifically designed to fit mathematics that are already known. The second point, significant point, is that that theory, the Ptolemaic theory, was conceptually wrong. The interpretation of the mathematics was wrong. That, again, is a general characteristic that applies to all inventive theories because of the circumstances under which they are invented. As many observers have pointed out, long-standing problems in science do not continue to exist because of a lack of competence on the part of those who are trying to solve them. Nor do they continue to exist because of a lack of methods by which to go about solving them. They continue to exist because some piece or pieces of information that are essential are missing. In the case of the Ptolemaic theory, there were two such pieces of information. The Greeks did not realize that the planets revolve around the sun rather than around the earth. And they did not know that there is a force of gravitation controlling those movements. Without those two pieces of information, neither the Ptolemaic theory nor any other theory that was invented to explain the mathematics could have been correct. Now that is a general characteristic of inventive theories. And I'm stressing it at this time because it will be important later on in other connections. If the information is available, if all the essential information is there, then there's no need to invent a theory. Then we can obtain it by inductive means. If the essential information is not there, then any theory we invent cannot be conceptually right. In view of the practically unlimited opportunity for making ad hoc assumptions, that is, adding epicycles, an inventive theory never comes to the fate of the inductive systems of theories. The inventive system may fail to account for a few things at any given time, but there's never the big accumulation that characterizes an inductive system of theory that's fallen behind the progress of discovery. But the inventive theory, ultimately in inventive system of theories, inventive science I might call it, ultimately encounters a fate of its own. Sooner or later, we just have too many epicycles. And in the meantime, the progress of observation and the construction of inductive theories of lower rank has continued, so that ultimately we get to the point where the scope of those theories is broad enough to challenge the prevailing inventive theory. And then the inventive theory goes to the boards. Now that's what happened to the Greek inventive system about 500 years ago. And at that time, the perfection of the heavens and the natural places of objects and the other governing principles that the Greeks had invented were discarded and replaced by other principles that were derived by such men as Kepler and Newton from factual foundations by inductive reasoning. Now, the benefit of the 2,500 years of accumulated scientific knowledge since the demise of the first inductive theories, this new science of Newton and his contemporaries was a vastly improved product, and it scored some very impressive successes. At one time, the practitioners of that science were pretty thoroughly convinced that a knowledge of the entire physical universe was within their grasp. But here again, the inherent weakness of an inductive theory again asserted itself, and Newtonian science found itself faced with a series of problems for which it had no answer. So then the present-day inventive science took over. Now, when an idea or a set of ideas gains general acceptance and becomes a familiar feature of thought, its origins recede from view. And I wouldn't be surprised at what many of you may be reluctant to accept the idea that the basic theories of present-day physics, such as the relativity theory, for example, belong in the same category as the Ptolemaic theory of planetary orbits. But they were all inventive theories. The originators of the present-day theories don't deny that. In fact, they emphasize it. We might even say they glory in it. Einstein told us that pure invention is the only way by which these basic principles can be obtained. And he was highly critical of Newton's attempt to ascertain them inductively. Here's what he said. Newton believed that the basic concepts and laws of his system could be derived from experience. The tremendous practical successes of his doctrines may well have prevented him and the physicists of the 18th and 19th centuries from recognizing the fictitious character of the foundations of his system. Einstein's own view was that the basic concepts and laws of physics, what I'm calling the fundamentals, are, quote, in a logical sense, free inventions of the human mind. He elaborates this view in these statements that I have taken from his book, The World as I See It. Since, however, space perception only gives information of this external world of physical reality indirectly We can only grasp the latter by speculative means. A theoretical scientist is compelled in an increasing degree to be guided by purely mathematical, formal considerations in his search for a theory, because the physical experience of the experimenter cannot lift him into the regions of highest abstraction. The axiomatic basis of theoretical physics cannot be an inference from experience, but must be free invention. There is a rather general tendency to believe that Einstein and the other architects of modern physics could not have been as casual about the foundations of their system as these words would indicate, that they must have been tied into something, anchored to something solid somewhere. But that's not true. As Rudolf Carnap puts it, they were constructed floating in the air, so to speak. Einstein gives us enough information about the origin of his own theories to make it clear that when he talks about free inventions, he means free inventions, nothing else. For instance, the propagation of electromagnetic radiation plays a very significant part in his theories. And the comments that he made about the theory that he invented to account for that propagation have a considerable bearing on what we're talking about now. In one of his books, he goes on at considerable length about what a difficult problem this is. And he concludes with this statement: our only way out seems to be to take for granted the fact that space has the physical property of transmitting electromagnetic waves, and not to bother too much about the meaning of that statement. The point of all this is that all invented theories share this same defect. They are all mathematically correct, but they are all conceptually wrong, not because of any errors in the construction, but because of their inherent characteristics. Now, this statement may seem to be in direct conflict with a great many of the confident assertions that we find in present-day scientific literature, which tell us that the validity of present-day theories has been established beyond any reasonable doubt. But if you look at the evidence in support of those assertions, you will find that it is all mathematical. What has been done is to establish that those theories are mathematically correct, just as I have said here all along that they are, because of the way they were constructed. But those theories that are mathematically correct are not unique. None of them is. In every case, there are other theories that are also mathematically correct. And as Richard Feynman tells us, we can't distinguish between any two of them on any mathematical on any scientific basis and say which is correct. Because, as Feynman says, they both agree with experiment to the same extent. So two theories, although they may have deeply different ideas behind them, may be mathematically identical, and then there is no scientific way to distinguish them. Now, Feynman goes on to say this: every theoretical physicist who is any good knows six or seven theoretical representations for exactly the same kind of physics. What Feynman does not say is that those statements apply only to the present day and other day inventive theories. They do not apply to inductive theories. Those are theories that have been derived by induction from factual premises. For example, the kinetic theory of gases is a theory that relates the gas laws to the motions of the particles that compose the gas. Now, no one tells us that he has a half a dozen equally valid representations for what the kinetic theory tells us. In fact, there is not another one alternative, because the kinetic theory is an inductive theory that's tied into the facts both mathematically and physically, so that it's both conceptually and mathematically correct. Whereas the inventive theories are correct mathematically only. Now that raises a interesting philosophical question as to whether there's actually any net gain by using these inventive theories during a period when we would otherwise have no theories at all to account for some important physical phenomenon. Actually, we don't need them. We could equally well use the mathematical relations that we have without any theoretical explanation. So the whole thing boils down to a question as to whether there is any, would any better to have a wrong theory than no theory at all. Now there's a very widespread belief that that's true, that it is better to have a wrong theory. It dates back at least to Francis Bacon. The idea behind it is that a plausible theory, even if it's wrong, may suggest some lines of inquiry that in the end will be productive. On the other hand, we know that continued adherence to the Greek inventive theories, particularly during the last few years of the Greek ascendancy, was a very serious roadblock in the way of scientific progress. And we have pretty good reason for believing in much the same as we know. In any event, the fact that needs to be recognized at the moment is that we have again arrived at the kind of a situation that existed in the Middle Ages. The present-day inventive theories have accumulated too many epicycles. And at the same time, inductive theory has caught up with observation and experiment, so that as we enter the 21st century shortly, we are in a position to go back from the inventive theory to a solidly based inductive theory again. Now, the imminence of such a change could be deduced simply from an examination of the times involved in the cycle of reversals that I've been talking about. The first inductive theories lasted for thousands of years before they were overthrown by the Greek inventive science. And that, the first of the inventive sciences, endured for 2,500 years before it met its fate at the hands of Newtonian inductive science. The accelerating pace of science is shown by the fact that in spite of its greatly superior character, the science that's normally associated with the name of Newton only lasted for 400 years before it in turn succumbed to the second inventive science. Now, if we consider the same rate of acceleration, we can see that since another 100 years have passed, that we are about due for another reversal will take us back into an inductive theory. But we don't have to depend entirely on inferences of that kind, because there's plenty of direct evidence to show that we are again in the same kind of a situation in which Greek science found itself during the Middle Ages. In the first place, the accumulation of epicycles has reached the point of absurdity in a great many cases. The quantum theories, for instance, have a long history of one ad hoc modification, interpretation after another, until it's very questionable now if the theory is even intelligible. In fact, Richard Feynman, who I've already quoted a couple of times, says it isn't. Feynman says this: I think I can safely say that nobody understands quantum mechanics. The situation in the field of atomic structure is much the same. The favorite pastime there these days is inventing properties for the elusive particles called quarks. Now, nobody has seen or otherwise observed a quark or anything that could be a quark. In fact, the most urgent problem for the theorists right now is to invent some theory by which it can be said that the quarks are inherently unobservable. But nevertheless, we are told just what kind of quarks can exist and what their properties are. Such interesting properties as color, charm, and so on. In order to fit this situation into the proper perspective, let's bear in mind that not only are the quarks themselves unobservable, but the particles that are supposed to be constructed out of quarks have never been observed either. Now, it's true that those particles are given some familiar names, such as electron, for instance. But the hypothetical electron, constituent of the atom, has a totally different set of properties from the observed electron. And there's actually no adequate justification for calling them by the same name. The same is true of the other hypothetical constituents. The hypothetical neutron constituent of the atom, for instance, has to be stable, whereas the observed neutron is very much unstable. The truth is that there is no definite evidence that the atom is constructed of particles at all.
Okay, I'm going to pause that just for a second, because this is a key to what I've been trying to show people. You know, I always use the electron theory because that's what I learned in school. And so it's easier to explain to people of how something's actually functioning than it is to try to bring them into a whole new different realm of science, you know. And what this man pretty much has been saying all along is everything is all theoretical to this point. You know, nobody's ever seen the electron. It's theoretical, and an electron can be mathematically proven, whereas just about anything out there under right circumstances could be mathematically proven. You can get the math to fit whatever it is that you want to say. Now, take it how you want. No BS detector come in here and jumped the gun and called me some filthy stuff, which I deleted his comment out of the chat room. And if he shows back up and creates a ruckus, I'll just ban him from the chat room. Because we don't got time for stupid here. We don't have time for shenanigans. I'm sitting here trying to show people some off-the-store shelf things where they can literally mimic what's going on in a magnetic field, you know, inducing a current flow in coils of wire using the minimum amount of energy input as possible in order to get the most efficiency out of the system. Like I said, the 9-volt battery that I used in those videos, it wasn't even charged up to a full 9 volts, and that's why I showed in the video. I said, I got something about this battery I want to show you, because that 9-volt battery wasn't even fully charged. And in reality, worked better. The circuit worked better and generated less heat at a lower voltage, and it brought the... See, if you pulse a circuit too fast, If you pulse the coil too fast, the frequency range will actually go up so high that it will bypass even the wireless energy portion, because it's expanding and collapsing so fast it doesn't have time for that field to go across there to the wireless core, the ceramic core on the other side, the ferrite core that has a coil on that wireless circuit that I show in the video. And so it doesn't have enough time to saturate that that core, because it's happening too quickly. But by tuning the thing back down, to slowing that MOSFET back down, I can get that long length of expansion and contraction of the magnetic flux that is actually crossing through that wire and producing the field. And so the best way for me to explain that is using the electron theory. But what this man just got through telling you is that nobody's ever seen it. Nobody's ever seen the electron or the proton or the neutron. We see particles that we call atoms and stuff. We can literally look down through microscopes. But as far as the theory behind the electron theory may not be the actual truth of what's actually going on. Nonetheless, the energy that we call electricity can be manipulated by something as simple as a wave, a radiation, or a radio wave, whatever. By sending a pulse out there, you can interact with the energy that surrounds this copper wire, and you can produce what we call electricity. I'm just simply trying to show the world that there is an easier method by which to do it. We've got DC current, we've got AC current, and we've got frequency electricity. Electricity specifically from frequency ranges, static, electric, or whatever, it doesn't matter. Science can't deny that voltage is pressure. That's what we've been taught, all right? It's voltage is pressure. Pressure is what gets work done. So all the current watts and amps that I keep getting chewed out for, or cursed at, mocked and ridiculed, those aren't necessary to a certain extent. Until you get to, when you take your energy delivery system and you take that energy that you want to use, there's a lot of power in a 9-volt battery. There's a lot of power in there. More power than you can possibly imagine. You take that energy and you're using that energy in a motor controller to pulse a MOSFET that is basically a really fast acting switch, and it's turning on and off a field in a short winding that's going around a ferrite core, which is inducing the current in the two transformer coils that I showed you two. Basically, they came out of an electric motor, a fan motor out of a microwave. But you can tune that up and down. You can speed it up for a high frequency, high voltage, or you can slow it down for a lower voltage, higher current. And so, if properly utilized, you can store that pressure in capacitors. When you store that pressure in capacitors, then you can literally take those capacitors when they get fully charged up and use that pressure as a punch to literally shove that energy into a larger capacitor bank. And doing this repeatedly, be able to get enough stored energy potential that you could run a smaller load on that thing that would run constant as long as you kept repeating that cycle over and over again. That's what I've been trying to say. So for that idiot that showed up in here, BS detector, you think you're educated, and I know exactly who you are, all right? You think you're educated, but you're not. And all you're doing is hindering everyone else out here trying to make advancements, trying to get our way out of this doggone mess that humanity's found itself in by trusting mainstream scientists and government entities and corporations to have our best interests at heart. And they don't. I don't call this mad science for nothing. And so, if I have to go to somebody's Flat Earth channel in order to find a speech that was given by Dewey B. Larson in 1978 that talks about the truth about scientific theory and all that kind of stuff, then so be it. But it don't say that I believe the earth is flat or round. I couldn't care less. I don't care if the earth is flat or round. I don't care what shape the earth is. I care what shape the earth is in. And there's no hidden agenda behind me trying to show this other than the fact that here's a man giving a speech that's saying pretty much what I say. That theory is just theory. And what I'm showing is scientific, proven fact, using basic science, basic physics, and everything necessary in order to solve a problem that the government's been saying we have, the governments of the world, and even the average Joe who succumbed to people like BS Detector, who is so indoctrinated by the school system that they can't even have a decent conversation and test what it is that I'm saying. All right? Now, has BS Detector ever put these circuits together and did any math or any measurements? No. Just come in here, call me filthy names, and disrupt the show. That's it. So, the BS Detector just went off on yourself, dude. And that's all there is to it. Now, if people can't step outside the box long enough to listen to somebody else's view and opinion and agree to disagree in a respectful manner, then don't show up at ShazizRadio.com because we don't play that here. And I will ban somebody from the chat room if they're being rude and disrespectful. It's my website. I'm trying to share with the world some information that I've researched throughout my life. I'm trying to share some mechanical knowledge and recruit somebody who has skills in electronics and different things. We're together. We can actually get together and build the devices of the future. I can't do that with idiots like that. Because idiots like that are indoctrinated by a school system that you have seen their track record. It stinks. It don't take no 40 some odd years to resolve starvation and sickness in the world. It don't take no 40 some odd years to resolve the homeless condition in the world. It don't take no 40 some odd years to resolve the so-called global warming / climate change or climate disruption or whatever it's going to be the next week when the math doesn't add up. It doesn't take no 40 years to get resolution. It takes people with understanding in certain subjects to get together and build whatever it takes to resolve said issue. That's why I get so angry. That's why I get so frustrated. That's why the Mad Science Show is the Mad Science Show. The Knights of the Round Table is the Knights of the Round Table. And for idiots like that, I know exactly who it was. All right, and I don't care. But this ain't going to happen here. It ain't going to happen. If people out there, what's it going to take? What's it honestly going to take to get brilliant people to come together? Now, I am not sitting here asking anybody on here to give me money. I'm not sitting here trying to fear-monger the world into following my agenda. I'm not trying to get rich. I'm not trying to get famous. I'm trying to get nothing but some common sense on the table so that people can get out there and make this world a better place. It's as simple as that. I spent many, many, many years doing what it is that I'm doing right now. I spent many years putting a platform together to bring people together. And I had to do my YouTube in a creative fashion in order to bring people to the table, to open their minds to the possibilities to think outside the box of the indoctrination system that is our education system. And it disgusts me. It frustrates me to no extent that here we have off the shelf, already in existence, proof of what it is that I'm saying. This flasher switch, it is an electromagnet. It's an induction coil. It is a relay. It is able to handle up to, what did I say earlier, 24 amps or something like that. Let me look again. See, I'm trying to look on side here, and this is bad for radio. Do 12 volts at, where's it at? Maximum 25 amps. So this thing can withstand up to 25 amps before it burns up. So that tells me that using a similar style circuit that we can pulse large coils for large current, and we can replicate the same circuit multiple times so that we can have one of them fire, and then the next one fire, and then the next one fire on down the line, and using the MOSFET technology. You've seen the video, if you've clicked on the link, that another YouTuber out there who's trying to show people stuff, he got cursed out. You should read some of the comments in the doggone section. More BS detectors out there. But anyway, he took some MOSFETs and with 4 volts was able to turn over a starter motor with that. Alright, if it's fake, like what they said in there, then I'm challenging anybody out there to take that circuit, build that circuit, replicate what the guy did, and prove it, put it on a video, show it doesn't work. It's as simple as that. But I don't think you're going to succeed, even if you try to prove it wrong, because of this doggone relay switch that's in my hand. When you produce an electromagnet, that tells me that you got some current flow going on in there. You got some power going on in there. Because high voltage alone won't do that. It won't produce the strength of that field to pull a doggone metal rod in and out to turn the switch on and off. So that tells me that you got current flowing in there. So if you take the same exact technology and the MOSFET technology and the transistor technology, you can literally build the perfect circuit that will basically make the AC converter look like child's play. And you would have a super efficient generating system that all you'd have to do is supplement it with a solar panel and some batteries or capacitors or whatever. And that thing would do the same job that a big turbine would do. That a big electric motor or generator or whatever would do. Alright, so I'm going to play some more of this so I can rest myself and then get back at it.
Now that may seem to be rank heresy, but a great many of our foremost scientists have said the same thing in different words. For instance, here's Erwin Schrödinger. Once we have become aware of this state of affairs, the epistemological question, do the electrons really exist in these orbits within the atom, is to be answered with a decisive no, unless we prefer to say that the putting of the question itself has absolutely no meaning. Here we have a good example of the difference between induction and invention in the construction of a theory. And since I'm making this my principal point, I want to elaborate on it a little. Such men as Newton and Einstein were very much aware of that difference. Newton insisted time and time again that he did not resort to invention. Einstein, on the contrary, criticized Newton for trying to get his theories inductively. But I'm afraid that a great many people do not recognize the difference because they both start in the same way. They both start with a hypothesis. That's the only way we're going to arrive at something more general than what we already have. We have to start with a hypothesis. But the Newtons look upon that hypothesis as something to be tested. They test the hypothesis, and if it doesn't fit the facts, they throw it out and try a new hypothesis, or at least a greatly modified hypothesis. They test that, and if that doesn't work, they try another one. On the other hand, the Einsteins take that hypothesis and test it, and if it doesn't work, they invent something to make it work. And if that doesn't work quite right, they invent something to help the first invention make it work. Well, you may think I'm being funny on this, but read Einstein himself, and he tells you exactly that same thing in different words. As he said, it has to be pure invention. But that's the difference between induction and invention. In the one case, it's hypothesis, test, discard. Hypothesis, test, discard, until we finally don't have to discard. In the other case, it's hypothesis, test, invent. Test, invent, until we get something we don't have to invent anymore. When it was first discovered that atoms disintegrate under certain appropriate conditions and emit particles in so doing, it was a very natural hypothesis that the atoms were constructed of such particles. But now that we have found out that those particles do not have the properties that are necessary in order to be constituents of atoms, we have a totally different situation. We no longer have any justification for inventing something that we can find no trace of. But the general opinion still stands that these atoms must be constructed of particles. And present day theories are obsessed with the idea that they have to keep on dividing and subdividing until they get to something that they can call an elementary particle. In fact, the whole situation and with the physical particles is beginning to resemble that status of the fleas in that popular little verse that maybe most of you remember. It goes something like this: big fleas have little fleas upon their backs to bite them. The little fleas still smaller fleas, and so on, ad infinitum. The impetus for this frantic search for an elementary particle of matter comes from the present-day concept of the nature of the universe, which sees it as one in which the basic entities are elementary particles of matter existing in a framework provided by space and time. But the modern discovery that matter can be converted into non-matter and vice versa has completely destroyed that concept. It's now obvious that matter cannot be the basic constituent, that there must be some common denominator underlying both matter and non-matter. And since that is the situation, there must be some level below which matter does not exist, and that which exists is this common denominator, whatever it is. For the moment, let's call it X. This again is nothing particularly heretical. Some of our foremost scientists have emphasized it quite strongly. Heisenberg, for instance, is very clear on the subject. He's tried to figure out what this entity X could be. He suggests energy, but he has no idea, he admits, or did admit, how energy could fit the bill. So I'll return to this question of the identity of X a little bit later. In the meantime, let's consider further this question of inventive versus inductive theories and how they stand now. At the beginning of this century, when modern inventive theory took over from Newtonian inductive science, the necessary information for constructing an inductive theory that would account for the new discoveries that had been made around that time was entirely inadequate. The information that could be collected was not enough to extend the existing inductive theories into what we may call the far-out regions, the regions of the very fast, the very small, and the very large. Now, there were a few of the essential building blocks already in place. The discrete nature of the units of energy had already been established. Radioactivity had been discovered, and the status of electric current as a movement of electrons had been determined. But there was still an immense amount of information that had to be collected before an inductive theory that was capable of being extended into these far-out regions could be constructed. That information has now been accumulated. And the final inductive step that was necessary in order to construct a theory that would extend into all these regions has been taken by the development that's the subject of discussion at this conference. That development, like a great many other results of scientific research, was a totally unexpected result of a project aimed at an entirely different objective. The original objective was to construct a theory or some means whereby physical properties could be calculated from the chemical composition. In some respects, that's not a very good subject for examination, because it's been very thoroughly combed over by previous investigators. But on the other hand, it's also something that has a definite answer, because obviously those chemical properties or those physical properties are determined by the chemical composition. I want to say at this point that while I may be regarded as a heretic, that's not by inclination. I started from a purely conventional base. And my first work was directed entirely along conventional lines. The base from which I started was the idea that's embodied in the periodic table. The idea that the principal properties of the chemical elements are determined by two variables represented horizontally and vertically in the tables. The first really important advance that I made, at least it's important in view of what turned up later on, was the finding that one of these variables takes both positive and negative values, whereas the other one takes positive values only. Then, after a good deal of additional trial and error, I found that there were actually three variables rather than two. Now, while all this, these efforts to determine the form of the mathematical relations were going on, I was also struggling to determine the meaning of the terms in those relations. That's the other essential for an inductive theory, one that will be conceptually valid. Here again, I didn't stray off the reservation for quite a while. I started from the purely conventional idea that the atom is made up of a group of particles, and that the properties, the differences in properties between the elements, are due to differences in the number and arrangement of those particles. But after some years of work, I got nowhere, exactly nowhere. So I had to try some different approach, or quit the job. I tried a number of things and discarded them. The old trial and error process that we learn in college. Finally, I got the idea that perhaps some of the differences in the properties might be due to differences in motions of the particles, rather than in differences in the actual number and arrangement of the particles themselves. So I tried that. Well, that didn't work either. But in the process, there were some indications that I might be on the right track. So I just didn't throw that away immediately. I worked some more on it. And as I worked on it, it became evident that the more emphasis I put on the motions and the less emphasis I put on the number of particles, the more of these indications were that I was getting somewhere.
That's what I'm saying.
I simply discarded this idea that the motions might account for some of the differences in the properties, and I substituted the idea that the motions account for all of the differences in the properties. It's that error that has caused astronomy to far exceed science fiction, with all of its collapsed stars, its neutron stars, its black holes, its white holes, its wormholes. No, I'm not making that up. That's in the literature. I noticed last week that quark stars have been added to the list. It's that conceptual error that's brought astronomy to that pretty pass, we might say. Our reciprocal system enables explaining all these things without those fantastic ideas. It brings the physics of the far-out regions down to the same simple and logical relationships that exist in the more familiar regions of our everyday experience. Now, I'll have to admit that maybe that isn't what you want. Maybe we're merely regarded as heartless destroyers of pleasant illusions and entertaining ideas. So be it. There's one happy thought I want to leave my associates with, and that is that even though we're doing the same thing that our predecessors did in the Middle Ages, we're challenging a thoroughly entrenched and established system of inventive thought we're not likely to meet with the same fate as those people. We're not likely to get thrown in jail or burned at the stake. So thank you.
So there you go, folks. You know, and that's the whole thing right there. I didn't bring this to the table because I'm trying to prove or disprove whether the earth is flat or round. If you listen to what the man said about the science and about the way that the science works and about the way that it should be, where you bring things down to the simple. See, here's the thing. You don't even have to understand or believe or disbelieve in the electron theory. You know that certain causes cause certain effects. And so we know whatever that energy force is that we call electricity can be manipulated by speeding it up and slowing it down. It's as simple as that. We know that we need a certain amount of current flow in order to be able to run the inefficient appliances that we use today. It ain't like they couldn't be redesigned to run on less, because they could. It's already been proven. And so what I've been showing right here, with this last videos that I showed, the three solved videos that I put out there so far, probably end up doing some more with some updates, but nonetheless, because I want to repeat that I had figured out after I burned out my doggone voltmeter that all I had to do is instead of running the voltmeter in line was to throw a high voltage diode in between there, and I got the same exact results. But nonetheless, I was able to take one signal, charge an AC capacitor, charge a DC capacitor, energize gas into the fourth state of matter, use a fluorescent bulb starter as a automatic charge and discharge switch, and be able to, you know, do some wireless energy transfer as well. Energizing with one little simple circuit, two separate coils, using a center point tap in order to manipulate that energy, whether you want to call it magnetic field or magnetic flux, nonetheless. You don't even have to believe in electrons or not, or whatever. You don't even have to understand how the stuff is working all the way down to the microscopic level. All you have to know is that that energy that is surrounding all the different objects when manipulated produces a reaction that we call electricity. And there is a more efficient manner in which to do it. That's what I pointed out. And so if I could find the right individuals who really know a lot about electronic circuitry, who could literally help me custom design, I'll tell them what I needed to do mechanically. I know enough about the electronics to literally explain to them what needs to be done in order to make sure that heat doesn't destroy the MOSFETs or the 555 timers or whatever circuitry that we do. The only time heat is even an issue is when you're doing something where you're using too much energy in a system. Too much current flow will burn up a diode, it'll burn up a resistor, it'll burn up transistors, MOSFETs, 555 timers, all of them. But if you're able to take, like this doggone switch that I told you about that basically takes the lights and switches them back and forth, the alternate lights, and this circuit says that it can only hold up to a maximum 25 amps before it'll burn up, then that means that's pretty durable. And for that little circuit to be able to pulse a basically the equivalence of electromagnet, which is a solenoid because it's bringing the switch, turning it on and off using magnetic field. And I'm saying magnetic field, I'm using the electron theory to explain what it is that I'm talking about, because that is the standard deal that everybody understands. When in reality, according to theory and everything else, And according to the way the indoctrination system of the education system functions, electricity may very well, more than likely, not be what we think it is. But nonetheless, we know how to interact with certain materials to get certain results, and taking those certain results, those are mechanical tools in the toolbox, such as leverage, being able to use a long pole and a fulcrum point, and be able to lift a heavy object that otherwise you couldn't physically lift by yourself. Or what Tesla showed with the knife switch, by turning it off and on rapidly, he was able to get sudden spikes in voltage and frequency by the faster that he did that. And now we have cell phones because of it. We have wireless energy. We have telecommunications and radio and TV because of it. And supposedly satellites that beam these same signals using the same oscillation circuitry that he designed whenever he was flipping that switch back and forth quickly. You can send signals out on this thing. And they do it. We're doing it right now. So, what's it going to take? I mean, the answer to what everybody has supposedly been looking for in order to save the planet, clean, renewable, alternative energy sources, free energy, is right there. Right there in front of the world's face. And all I'm saying is we need the right team to come together to build the circuitry that will make, at the very least, our energy usage so incredibly efficient. You want to talk about incredible efficiency? That circuit, doing wireless energy transfer, charging up a DC on one side and DC capacitors on one side, which is able to do work on that side, charging up an AC capacitor, producing plasma, producing a lot of voltage pressure, and all the different things that goes on in this circuit. I mean, multiple things done in one circuit from one battery, 9-volt battery, that was not fully charged. I show this in the video. And so, you're getting a whole lot of work done at one specific frequency. And it doesn't, you're not limited to that. Because you could build a circuit, if you need high voltage for your fluorescent lighting, you need a higher frequency, you could have a simultaneous circuit running on the same exact transformer that will produce a higher frequency wave that will run that fluorescent light while you're running the other things. It's going to require more current flow in order to be able to run them. So the technology is right there. And for that idiot that showed up in my chat room, BS detector, you don't understand mad science. You don't even understand basic science. All you know is you've been indoctrinated into acting like you do. When you come in disrespectful and you call somebody filthy names like that, here on Shaziz Radio, I deleted your comment. And if there's any more shenanigans, I'll actually ban you from the chat. I don't care. Because there's people out there that want to resolve problems. And we're bringing the solutions to the table here at ShazizRadio.com. We put a platform together. We're not charging nobody to come here. We're not trying to beg money from them. We're not trying to get rich or famous or trying to fraud anybody. Everything that I put out there on the deal, if you take the time to test it yourself, and you get a different result, then you can come back and we can discuss what occurred that got that different result. It's that simple. We don't come in here trying to preach all your indoctrination to everybody and then try to make yourself look intelligent when you're only doing quite the opposite and making yourself look ignorant. What I've showed in these videos and all these links that I've posted to other people's videos, what they've been showing is a different method by which to do things. There's circuit board diagrams, schematics that you can build, you can test. I did it. When I saw the flyback driver circuit, I'm into high voltage, and it cost me $80 every time I burn up a oil burner igniter that I use for my research. And now I can build that same exact circuit for pennies on the dollar. That's what I'm talking about. And you wonder why I call it mad science. And that's why I call it mad science. Because I'm sitting here telling everybody that says that the world is supposedly, dying because of pollution and carbon emissions and all that kind of stuff, which doesn't even pan out scientifically and has no relevance to nature, what nature does. Nature has provided more energy than we could ever use in a trillion lifetimes. And if used properly, one molecule of water has hydrogen and oxygen in there. Those two separated. One is a highly implosive gas and one is a highly explosive gas. That's what science says. And so if you can separate water, you can burn water. And when I try to tell somebody about how it's possible to literally build a compression ignition internal combustion engine designed specifically to run off of a fuel such as water using induction technology, atomization technology, vaporization technology, diesel engine technology, the internal combustion engine technology, and all the other different things that could go into all those pieces of the puzzle put in the right place, you could literally engineer an engine specifically designed to run off of pure distilled water. See, in the electrolysis process, you have to be able to make the water conductive so that you can actually get process to occur. But if you actually look at all these different cells that they put together, they're far enough apart that the water, unless you put some sort of impurity in it, won't conduct very. It will still do the electrolysis process without any sodium inside there, salt or whatever. But it won't do it as fast as if it was conducted. Now imagine you build an electrolysis process where you first boil the water into steam and then vaporize that steam into its smallest molecule and you actually have the plates so close together that by the naked eye it almost looks like they're touching each other. I mean, just a fraction of a hair thickness apart from each other. Then those small molecules, you don't have to have any salt in there in order to separate that hydrogen and oxygen, because you just shorten that path for that electrolysis to occur. And so it ain't that we can't do it. Your standard electrolysis process draws too much amperage, so it's the least efficient way to do it. Stan Myers used customized injectors and radio waves in order to crack the water molecule, and I'm positive that he also heated that water up using the engine itself in order to pre-energize that water. Because when you get those molecules beating around on each other, that speeds them up, and then it's easier to, get it to the point where the water molecule begins to break down, and then when you send it in there in a fine atomized or vaporized mist and fire a radio signal through that it will instantaneously ignite that fuel. And even when these idiots are out there trying to quote the laws of thermodynamics, which they have no understanding of what the laws of thermodynamics are even implying, then you can use the laws of thermodynamics to literally regulate the temperature in a cylinder while this thing is running just by putting more fuel in. And the laws of thermodynamics are essentially there to convince people that perpetual motion is not possible. That it's a closed loop system, that you can't get out more than you put in, you can't get something for nothing, you can't get it to run, start itself, run itself, and all that in a closed loop system. We're not trying to do that. So the laws of thermodynamics don't even apply to what we're doing here. All we're doing is taking a power source, an input source, which once I put a battery to it, it's out of the realm of perpetual motion anyway because I got an outside energy force. So the laws of thermodynamics don't even apply. We're not even trying to get perpetual motion according to the theories of the way it is. Once I put a battery to it, that's an outside power source. So it ain't perpetual. It ain't free energy because eventually that power source is going to drain down. So the ridiculousness of people coming out there trying to quote the laws of thermodynamics when I'm trying to tell them about building an engine that runs on water, it's ridiculous. Because the water is the outside power source. The battery that you're going to use to start these cylinders to build up the compression, to build up the heat inside that cylinder, or to run the induction heater around the cylinder to bring it up to 300 degrees Fahrenheit, which is well above the boiling point at sea level. You're pre-treating the water before it gets there. You're not mixing any additives in there. You're using the power source to get the thing started. Once you get the thing started and vaporize it, atomize it, and then let the compression and the temperature and the ignition do the rest, you got a car that runs on pure distilled water. No ifs, ands, or buts. And you design that specific engine, the implications for it, for generating electricity for people. I mean, if you can't come across water, then you ain't paid attention in basic science. You can pull water straight out of the air, especially if you live in a humid climate. And the earth is 3/4 covered in water, so you're never going to run out of it. It's just crazy to me that I can't get people who are supposedly educated to pay attention to what it is that I'm saying. We have every single piece of the puzzle available to us right now to literally give to the world clean, renewable, alternative, free energy. No ifs, ands, or buts. And there ain't nobody out there with their high-tech terminology or their misquoting of the laws of thermodynamics because they have no understanding of what it is that I'm trying to say. If you put something in a closed-loop system and you're trying to go for perpetual motion, or you're trying to go for over-unity, or even zero point for that matter, then your laws of thermodynamics, those work that they were designed for, to say that it can't be done. But if you're trying to do what I'm trying to do, what I have done, what I've showed people of how to do, is you're using one energy source to its maximum, and I mean its maximum efficiency. There is more power potential in a 9-volt battery than you can possibly imagine. It ain't no different than the power potential in a couple drops of water. You separate that hydrogen, you separate that oxygen into its gas, and then you ignite that and listen to and watch and observe with a scientific method the power that is released from that little bit. And you understand why it is I'm saying what I'm saying. Basic science, basic electricity, says that voltage is pressure. Pressure is what gets work done. If you understand an air compressor, and you understand that the volume inside that tank takes you a little while to build up that volume. But once you build that volume up higher than the potential pressure in the tire that you're trying to lift up, you can not only air that tire up, but you can lift the weight of that vehicle with that pressure and be able to do it not once, but 4 times on your car. Until the air compressor has to kick back on and fill the tank back up. Same thing with electricity. It's that simple. It's so so incredibly, ridiculously simple, it's frustrating. So, look, call me all the names you want. Troll me all you want. I don't care. I know the truth. I spent years and years researching the truth. There's devices out there that will literally change the waveform of the energy in your house. And they call it Go Green Smart Energy Saving. I don't care whether they say it's quack science or not. Honestly, don't. I'm going to copy this link. Select all. Control C. And Control V. See if that worked. Oh, that's a giant link. See if it takes you there. Yep, okay. There you go. It's a giant link. Should have used a tiny URL. But nonetheless, I'm putting it in there. It's on eBay. And this thing is essentially... it's essentially a capacitor. That's it. It's smoothing out the signal that's in the deal. And knowing that you can use capacitors for multiple purposes, you know, knowing that you can store energy and pressure in a capacitor, knowing how to induce the current which will produce what they call a magnetic field, the flux lines going through a ferrite core, and we use ferrite because it stays cooler because of what it's made out of, as opposed to laminates, which will generate more heat and are not as efficient, but do also have their purposes as well. See, people like to say that I don't know what I'm talking about. But I want you to go back, and I want to listen to all these doggone podcasts, and listen to what I've been saying all along, and maybe you come away with another understanding of what it is that I'm talking about. It's not that we don't have enough energy, it's that it's set up to fail. It's set up, parts are set up to break down. It's set up to use as much energy as physically possible. The more gas you put in the car, the more you make somebody money. The more electricity you suck up into your appliances, the more you make somebody money. And if the very least of what I can show you here is how to become so energy efficient that all you have to have is one little tiny solar panel out there to maintain a small power source to do exactly what it is you're doing right now, or even make it to the extent of the energy that you are using is used in its most efficient manner. Well, if you're saving yourself 99% of your electric bill, you could take that 99% of your electric bill and put it into other research and make yourself better in all different categories. Tesla tried to give people free energy. J.P. Morgan didn't have no part of it because J.P. Morgan wanted to get rich. And if you think that none of these rich people in the world have ever done any dirty deeds or lies or shenanigans or paid off scientists to say certain things in order to tell people that the laws of thermodynamics says you can't make a car that runs on water. Oh, really now? Somebody tell that to Stan Myers if you can resurrect him from the grave, because somehow or another he had a heart attack. Yeah. Stan Myers was driving around in the 70s in a dune buggy running on water. And he went to the media and told everybody, look, we can run our cars on water, save ourselves from the fossil fuel industry, whatever. But instead, the money makers out there know that war is profitable. And so if they can take us to war with another country, they can make money on medical supplies, they can make money on ammunition, they can make money on everything under the sun that has to do with what goes on in war. And they do it all under the guise of oil or resources. Try to say there's a terrorist behind every bush. These people up the top, they know exactly how to make money. And they're using we the people to do it. When the average Joe, such as myself, comes out here, puts a radio show together to share with everybody all the true science, the true physics, proven science, with proven technology that can be gotten off the store shelf, I got to deal with people like BS Detector. The idiots of all idiots come rolling up out of there to try to tell me how stupid I am. Or to try to use some big old twist of terminology to say, you know, you understand. Oh, that's insulting to me. That's ridiculousness. I'm saying it in a simple fashion so that everyone can understand. And I'm showing it as simple as possible so that everyone can understand. And if you don't like the word understand, I'm sorry about your luck. I've been using that word forever. It makes sense. It's common sense. The way that I explain it. And if my terminology offends you, if my science offends you, if my explanation offends you, I don't know what to tell you. Because I'm doing it in the most respectful manner here on Mad Science as physically possible, under the current circumstances of being trolled, not just here on YouTube, or Shaziz Radio, but on YouTube as well, and other places in the social media realm where people think they know it all when they don't. And I'm not sitting here telling you that I know it all, because I'm sitting here trying to recruit somebody who's really better in electronics than myself, so that I can take my mechanical brain and their electronical brain and put a circuit together that will benefit all of humanity. That's it. It's as simple as that. It don't get no simpler than that. And if the governments of the world can't get their act together by now, they ain't going to. If the corporations of the world get technology like this in their warehouses, guess who don't get it? If they get it before you get it, then you don't get it until they say you get it. Once they figure out a way to meter anything, then you'll be paying for it. Now, average Joe has access to technology right now that if they decide to come together and do what needs to be done, then we get free electricity. That's what it's going to take. And that's the only way we're ever going to get there. So, when I said, what is it going to take? It's going to take you and everyone else to take all this knowledge that has been gifted to you for free here on ShazizRadio.com, out there on YouTube by all the alternative energy researchers, and all the people who had studied and researched and knowledge that is available to you right now. It's going to take you to take all these pieces of the puzzle. I just showed you how to put them together. I just proved once and for all, 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt, what I set out to prove. Energy is free. Period. No ifs, ands, or buts. And if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough. And if you're trying to twist the terminology saying, oh, energy ain't free because you gotta buy this to do that, and you gotta whatever. Shut up, stupid. It's ridiculousness. It's coming out of your mouth. It's ridiculousness to quote the laws of thermodynamics when you don't even know what the heck you're talking about. Because what I'm talking about has absolutely nothing to do with perpetual motion, has nothing to do with zero point, has nothing to do with over unity, and I'm not even trying to defy any of the known laws of physics. I am taking every single piece of the puzzle, putting it together in such a manner that it makes the most efficiency out of every single piece of that. You know, the people who engineered engines that you'd ride around in, or cell phone technology or whatever, people who sat there and engineered that stuff, was able to give you the best of what they could with the knowledge that they had. I'm saying we can do better. We're here in the year 2017, and we still got people in the world supposedly starving to death. We still got people in the world hollering about climate change. We still got people in the world telling about the doomsdays, the world's going to come to an end and all that kind of stuff. We still got homelessness. We still got wars, rumors of wars, plagues, famine, pestilence, and all the craziness going on out there. When in reality, mad science has been showing you, and the Knights of the Round Table have been showing you all these years, there is a different way. There is a different solution. There are alternatives to everything under the sun. And if utilized, if you work in perfect harmony with nature, then you keep nature happy, you keep the nature lovers happy, you keep yourself happy, and you do it in the most efficient, clean manner possible, and you keep humanity happy. But you ain't going to keep the banker happy. You're not going to keep the power-hungry warmongers of the world happy. You're not going to keep the Monsantos or all the different drug industries or food industries. You're not going to keep them happy. Because you're going to feed the hungry, you're going to shelter the homeless, and you're going to heal the sick, and you're going to get clean, renewable, free, alternative energy sources where you ain't having to pay the man to go out and dig up the planet in order to produce the coal that burns to boils the water into steam that turns turbines that produces electricity. And you're not going to have to pay for the nuclear power plants that do the same exact job with a material that may or may not be a lot more dangerous than burning coal. So the answers are on the table. And the only way that I'm ever going to get this message out to anybody is if the people of that are listening to this show actually share this show and this information with people. That's it. I put it on to the Auto DJ, the podcast, and hoping that somebody will stumble along and they'll hear an idea and they'll go out there and they'll do something with this idea. They'll help each other out. They'll do something kind for each other, whatever. It's we the people that's going to fix this mess. The world didn't get in this state of affairs overnight. And it surely isn't going to get resolved overnight. But while we sit here, like my friend Simply Steve said, that we sit here in front of the vast sum of all man's knowledge at our fingertips, while we have access to that kind of information and access to the brilliant minds around this world, and we should take advantage of that situation. We should take advantage of that opportunity while we're standing here at this crossroads, arguing back and forth whether or not this is the right or wrong way to do it. And we should make things happen. You can do that by posting these podcasts on your social media networks and sharing it with other individuals. And if they're willing to take the time to actually pay attention to what's going on, we could actually resolve issues. Because like my friend Steve said at the top of this doggone deal, said nature needs no improvement. Only the arrogance of man requires change. Unfortunately, a lot of mankind have been indoctrinated into believing everything, and that's all they want to believe, and that's why people get so frustrated if you question whether or not the earth is round or flat, or whether or not we did or didn't go to the moon, or whether or not there is or isn't a one world conspiracy to overthrow the world and enslave humanity. If there wasn't some sort of conspiracy going on out there, why is it so doggone hard for me to give people what it is that they said they wanted to begin with? I have a mechanical understanding of how nature functions. Take that mechanical understanding of how nature functions, put it with somebody who has an understanding of how electronics work and all the parts and materials and all that kind of stuff. Put those two people together and we'll build a circuit that you can pulse coils. There are people out there like Larry Woods that are designing custom coils. And there are people who understand the best way to build coils. All the talent necessary to do what it is that I'm talking about can be found on that trash heap they call YouTube. Can be found out here. There's so much talent. And those people who are out there trying to show people things are being assaulted. Verbally and mentally assaulted. By idiots like BS Detector showing up in the chat room calling me filthy names and talking smack of things you don't know about. So with that said, that's why it's called mad science, folks. That's it. You want to call it a rant? Okay, that's good. Call it that. You want to call it me standing up on a soapbox? Call it that. And call it whatever you want. And you can even call me stupid if you want. I don't care. The facts speak for themselves. I'm saying try it before you deny it. I'm saying if you see something that you think that I've done wrong, well then, get up, get the parts together, replicate it, do a video about it, and then we can talk. If you show up in my chat room and you're going to disrespect the people that come here, these are wonderful individuals that work hard trying to give people something for free to make the world a better place, I'll ban you. I don't care. I'll delete your comment so you won't even get seen. It's that simple. Mad science is about seeing this world in the state of affairs and knowing there's a better way to do it than what is being done. And yet, here we go. Here we are, talking about it. Folks, I don't know what more to say that hasn't been already said. Listen to this podcast, re-listen to it, and if you believe what you heard, you like what you heard, if it's beneficial or you think it can benefit anybody, and you happen to have a Facebook or whatever kind of doggone deal, share it with somebody. Share the podcast with somebody. Today is November 4th, 11-4-2017. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be doing a Knights of the Round Table on Sunday because I've got to go out and cut some firewood to finish off the firewood that I cut for my mother and father-in-law. If I can get somebody to run another show for me, such as my friend Muddy or whatever, then there'll be a live show, but if otherwise, then I apologize ahead of time that I'm going out to help some folks. So I don't just sit here and talk on the radio. I get out there and I physically work. And so with that said, we'll have to make it up next go around. But nonetheless, there'll still be shows, there'll be podcasts, there'll still be, you know, me out here trying to share information and anybody else willing to join me here on the microphone. And we'll continue to do what it is that we do. And if you want to support our efforts, support Stephen Gibbons' efforts and all the people that show up in the chat room and post links and stuff, well then, that's what's going to make this work. And if you don't like this network, there are so many others out there that are trying to do something, anything. If it's positive, I'll help share their links, but if it's negative, you know, if it's doom and gloom and we're all going to die. Like, today's November 4th, and that's when they say that all these that crazy stuff, the Antifa group is supposed to go out and target cops and all that kind of stuff, which if they did that, that was just flat out stupid. I don't understand people. And they also said there's supposed to be some massive EMP drill that where they're going to shut down the power grid on you. That kind of stuff. I don't subscribe to the doom and gloom. I don't subscribe to all the craziness. But I'm not opposed to listening to the flat earth side. I'm not opposed to listening to the round earth side. I'm not opposed to listening to every side. I'm not opposed to listening to opposing views, as long as it's delivered with common sense and respectable and based off of the scientific observation of real science, not all this Scientology craziness, the whatever, the hoodoo voodoo version of whatever. We're not here trying to rip anybody off. We're not here trying to further an agenda outside of actually trying to make this world a better place. The world said they needed clean, renewable, alternative energy sources. I stepped forward and I put it on the table. There it is. And it doesn't even scratch the surface of what we are capable of doing. It's just time for the world out here to get their act together. It's time for the world to wake up. I'm tired. I'm going to get some rest, because tomorrow I got to go cut some firewood for my mother and father-in-law. So, if you're here today and you heard this show, and you know the regulars that come here, share it with them.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.